Well, hey, everybody. It's me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on this week's episode of I Don't Care with Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate you joining me. I think you're going to really enjoy today's guest. Joe's a returner. He was with me about 3 years ago, but say hi to my friend, Dr. Joe Pizzona. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me. I can't believe it's been that long since our last conversation.
I know. I looked through the files and I said, are you kidding? It's been 3 years. But you've done a lot in those 3 years. And so I think we've got a lot to unpack here. But remind my audience a little bit about what you do and talk about virtue care.
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. So I'm Dr. Joe Pizzona. I'm a board certified urologist, CEO and founder of Virtue Care. And Virtue Care's mission is caring for doctors, healing communities. And the way we accomplish that is by building sustainable outpatient specialty service lines. We've started with urology because I'm a plumber and that's what I know. And we've built this up to now 16 partnerships across 8 states. And we're starting to discuss scaling into additional outpatient specialties of need.
Talk a little bit about, you know, what you look for, the types of clients that you're looking for. I'm assuming, you know, my first blush would be rural hospitals and communities that don't have access to urology, but I think it's become a lot more than that, right?
It has, and you're spot on, Kevin. Certainly rural markets are the ones that are feeling the physician workforce shortage in the most manner, but it's now creeping into big cities because the fact remains that in urology, right now there's 1,100 job postings. And we only train 400 urologists a year. And the majority of those urologists aren't taking those jobs. They're going and joining major academic centers and 20, 30, 40, 80 man groups for economies of scale because, you know, docs, especially the younger ones, are valuing quality of life. They want to live in major to mid-sized markets. And so there's a huge need in rural areas, but you could just look at the numbers. We're going to have a physician shortage across all specialties in this country. And really what we're doing is getting ruthless about top of license care. And that's something that is thrown around a lot, but people don't take seriously. And it really means surgeons should be operating. Doctors should be leading care teams and dealing with complex medical decision-making. APPs should be seeing most of the patients in clinic and then the ancillary care team surrounding. And it's not because of ego. It's not because of anything other than we don't have enough people. And so I find it ludicrous when we take our most limited asset, which is a doctor and more specifically a surgeon, and we ask them to spend 4 hours clicking buttons for some mandatory, you know, module that we decided should be part of our bylaws this year, or that they're spending any time in today's day and age of AI ambient scribes charting. It doesn't make sense and patients are getting hurt. So what we've done with Virtue Care is said, let's build a team-based approach. Let's work together and make sure everybody is top of license. And that's a practical way we can start solving this problem.
Well, Joe, so many of my physician friends are exploring entrepreneurial ventures because of the compression on physician salary and the desire to have more control over their own lives. So share a little bit about the evolution of your entrepreneurial journey and then the founding of Virtue Care.
I am the definition of the accidental entrepreneur. I had no plan, Kevin, of doing this. And if I went back in time 20 years ago and you say you'd be doing this now, I'd say you're crazy. So with that as a background, you know, I had no doctors in my family. I kind of stumbled into medicine. I stumbled into urology. And when I finished training in 2008, I said to myself, I just want to go be a good community urologist. I want to use my full scope of skills. I want to live in a nice community and have time to be a dad and a part-time ski bum. And so I moved to rural Washington State. And I joined a great group. It was a physician-led multi-specialty clinic with physician leadership. My urology colleagues were awesome. They helped me through that tough transition post-residency of getting comfortable in the clinic and the OR when you don't have the expert by your side. And it was really a wonderful place to begin my career. But it also opened my eyes to a couple different things. The first are the challenges of practicing healthcare in a rural setting. You don't have the resources of a big city academic center. You don't have the staff, the infrastructure, the capital to practice the healthcare that you always want to practice. And so with that comes very often, well, Dr. Pizzona, that's not how we do things here. Now, some of those things is just maturing and understanding that those things are not possible. But it also brought up the second issue, which is what I saw of a different mindset. And in a lot of these communities, you know, people were not interested in progressing things forward. And, you know, they say in healthcare, everything you learn today, half of it's going to be wrong in 10 years. And so if you're still practicing medicine like it's 1997, I don't care how well-intended you are, how good of a doctor you are, you're not doing your patients a service. And so I started seeing the downside to taking the mindset as a physician, oh, I'll just let the business people worry about that. Because then they're dictating your daily schedule, your patient experience outside the confines of your exam room. So I think that was the sort of the first eye-opening aha moment, in addition to just seeing that, you know, patients in rural communities, they don't have the same resources. And so traveling more than 20 minutes to come see a doctor can sometimes be literally impossible, whether it be because they don't have rides or they don't feel comfortable driving in the big city. And so we've got to find ways to meet people where they are. So I'd say that's where my juices started flowing in terms of my entrepreneurial journey.
So walk me through what led you to found VirtueCare. How, you know, you talk a little bit about the rural aspect, but I know you're in Nashville now. How'd you get there? Where did that come from?
Yeah, great question, Kevin. So in Washington, I got that itch. I said, God, there's got to be something better out there, but probably not. Let me just go and look. And I'll never forget it. It was almost 10 years to the day ago that I received an email. And the first line of the email said, are you a physician who feels underappreciated? And I said, are you reading my mind?
Yeah, right.
And then it goes on to, you know, become chief of urology, head of robotic surgery, build a department in your dreams. And so I said, God, this can't be true. And so I started that process of exploring. I even had the opportunity to recruit a good friend who I trained with to come move with me. And after seemingly doing as much due diligence as we can, I moved my family 2,000 miles from Washington down to Alabama. And I got down there, and what on paper was a dream scenario, unfortunately ended up being a nightmare. And it was essentially a bait and switch. You know, whether it was from the recruiter or the hospital, we'll never know. But I was not a chief of anything. I was an employee. I didn't have any authority or decision-making ability. They just wanted me to show up and see patients and keep my mouth shut. And so very quickly, we went from a scenario where I was taking zero ER call to 10 days of call a month at a level one trauma center with a very active gun and knife club. And as a urologist, trying to build a department, do complex surgeries. And oh, by the way, my patients can't get a human being on the phone in a timely fashion. So they're driving 90 miles to Birmingham to be seen up there. And then we went into the administration, said, you know, you sold us this dream, but this is the reality. And you brought me here to build something, but then I don't have any authority. So what are you going to do about it? And they said, Joe, don't worry about it. We're going to fix it. And they fixed it a few months later, Kevin, when they fired me. They said, Joe, you, quote, don't fit in here. There's a clause in your contract that says we can part ways without cause. You're a great urologist. Don't get us wrong. But we'll see you. You got 6 months to work here. If you say anything about us in the next 6 months, we'll escort you off the property immediately. Let us know where you end up and best of luck. So coupled with some challenges in my personal life, dad of three young kids, went through a divorce, it was really my low point. And I really at this moment, Kevin, felt abandoned by the healthcare system. I felt that here I was, a doctor who, you know, was loved by his patients. I still get Christmas cards from patients back in Washington 15 years later. I'm not touting to be anything special. There are a lot of great doctors out there, but I really put my heart and soul into this. I was trying to progress things. And the way I got thanked was by being shown the door. And so I said to myself in this moment, for myself, for my family, I'm not going to put my future in the hands of anyone else moving forward. And that's what really started my entrepreneurial journey. So it first started with getting crystal clear on what it is you want. So I'm sure your listeners are going to want, what can I do if I'm considering entrepreneurship? Well, if you don't have a North Star as to where you're headed, then it doesn't matter what choices you make because you don't know where you're going. And so I got crystal clear and I made a list of, this is what I need for my professional life. This is what me and my family need for my personal life. Now let me go find that opportunity that best fits that, or even better, let me go create it. So that was the first step. Landed in Nashville, and I'm so glad that I did. I mean, this really is an incredible place. I look at it as the hub of all of healthcare in this country. And I said, you know what, doctors here are relatively independent. There's a lot of private equity and venture capital in healthcare here. There's a lot of tech startups. There's corporate entities. I'm going to be okay as a doctor in Nashville. I'm going to find something. So made that decision, joined a private practice. Because again, at this point, I still had no business sense. I just knew I needed more options than a small town. And then 6 months into joining the practice, COVID hits. So now revenue goes to zero. And now I'm looking at behind the scenes of a true, quote, private practice. Prior to this, I was an employee. So this was like my first exposure to the finances and the real numbers behind what it takes to run a practice. And I looked at it even with my naivete and said, you guys are in trouble. Your overhead's double what you said it was. You're not being honest with yourself. You make decisions that don't align with good patient care or business sense. I don't see a place for me. I'm out. And not proud to say that a year later I was right when the practice folded, but I literally built a business plan on the back of a napkin, Kevin. And I made the classic entrepreneurial mistake, so I'll hopefully share lots of those on this call of, well, if we're gonna start one business, two's a better idea, right?
Oh, sure.
Always, right? So I needed to pay bills. I don't have a golden parachute or a bunch in savings after all my life events. And so I opened a brick and mortar practice, took all insurance, and I was a solo urologist in the middle of Nashville, right between Vanderbilt and a 30-man urology group. And so during the pandemic, so to say level of difficulty was challenging would be an understatement, but our practice is still going. 6 years later, we've made lots of shifts that we could talk about on another podcast, but ultimately also saw that bigger market opportunity because when you go back to your original question, how'd you form VirtueCare? Well, at this moment, Kevin, I said, there are all these jobs that I saw 2 years ago when I first started looking, no one's taken them. And of the guys who took them, we got duped. And, fool me once, shame on me. So ultimately, I saw this opportunity and this asymmetry between where doctors want or need to live, but yet where they're needed. So my family and I needed to be in Nashville was where there was optionality, but we don't need another urologist in Nashville. We need one in Appalachia, Kentucky. We need one in Southern Illinois. But yet, that's not the right place for me to live. So how do we bridge that gap? And initially, I thought we were going to be a direct-to-consumer telemedicine company with VirtueCare, where I'd be the only urologist just seeing patients on online visits and just counseling people. Quickly got a lesson in the humility of branding a direct-to-consumer company and marketing funnels and other business lessons I had to learn the hard way. And we developed our current hospital model with VirtuCare, where essentially, again, we're building this hybrid team-based approach with remote doctors, fractional on-site, top of license care. So when you really boil down how and why did I form VirtuCare, it was literally out of necessity. I had to find a way to make sure that no matter where I was living, I'd never have to move away from my family for any period of time, and I could deliver care, but also find a way to care for those patients, because nobody is going to go to these communities at scale and help them. So it's really my why with everything I do. I do this for my family. I do this for my colleagues, the younger Joe Pizzonas who felt stuck, like, God, I don't like my group here. I don't like practicing in this environment, but God, I don't want to move my kids. They're happy, and my spouse has a great job here. So what is that person supposed to do? And that's really what drives us, you know, now moving forward every day.
Yeah, I mean, it could, and I'd say it couldn't happen at a better time, because, you know, one of the positive aspects of COVID was people finally realized, you know, telemedicine is a pretty great option for me. And, you know, I spent some time in rural Nebraska back in the early 2000s, where telemedicine was absolutely a necessity. But my hospital was within a couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours from most of our patients. So when they did need an in-person visit, it wasn't, you know, it was doable. But nowadays, people finally understand that, you know, if my doctor's in, you know, Nashville, I'm still going to get great care. And so, you know, I think while as you said, it came out of necessity, timing was great for that to happen.
Yeah, certainly couldn't have predicted that COVID would expedite the discussions around telemedicine, and that although we're not technically a telemedicine solution, it pulls on the same principles, and it's about reducing friction. And I think any physician entrepreneur needs to think in that mindset of, we're so accustomed to going, I've got to see a patient in person, and we've got to be all enrolled with insurance, and we got to play those reindeer games, and only I can see them because I'm the best person. Listen, you're going to get no arguments from me, Kevin. The ideal medical scenario is you get to see the same doctor who lives in your town, who's invested in your community for the rest of your life. But that's a quaint, impractical notion. It just doesn't exist at scale. Medicine is too complex. There are too many patients who are living longer with chronic disease who need this management. And what worked 30, 40 years ago, when the options of what even a small town doc could offer patients was limited, doesn't work in 2026. And so we must look at high leverage models to solve this problem.
And as you said, you're a urologist. You started with that concept, but now you're looking at other specialties. How come?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. Number one is our hospital partners in the market are asking for it. You know, I started with urology because it's what I know, but you could insert, honestly, any ology and you've got the same problems. Gastroenterology, otolaryngology, medical oncology. There's a core number of outpatient specialties that are built on a longitudinal patient experience, meaning you got to follow people and get some consistent care over time. And that those specialties are not well suited for the current Band-Aid approach, which is locum tenens. Now, you know, listen, locum tenens serves its purpose. When you need a general surgeon in your hospital and you need them for 1 week a month, that's great. But when you need a urologist, it doesn't make sense for them to sit there and wait for the few emergencies that I take care of, but then to have no continuity with building these service lines. So we're doing it out of necessity because our hospitals want it. And we're also doing it out of necessity, Kevin, because I'm getting doctors reaching out to me on LinkedIn saying, I love what you're doing. I'm burnt out as well. Can I work with you? How do I do this? And so, you know, again, back to discussing the entrepreneurial journey for, you know, specifically for physicians, there's a lot of different problems that can be solved in healthcare. I don't think I have to belabor that point. You can do anything, but you can't do everything. And so ultimately, everyone's going to have to decide, you know, do I want to go start my own business? And, you know, I can sit here and glorify it. I've skipped over to date the sleepless nights, the months I have not paid myself at all, while I just saw money going out the door to people who were maybe not effective, or we weren't bringing the revenue we should have, and I hired too many people for the time, and the countless mistakes that I've made, the imposter syndrome, the amount of failure that business has. You know, as a surgeon, you know, my bar is 100%. You know, the expectation when a patient comes in to see me is I will get rid of all their cancer with 100% certainty with zero complications. And that's not realistic, but it's the expectation. In business, the smartest businesses and the smartest leaders, they fail with intention and they learn from it, in which case it's not a failure, it's a learning opportunity. And then you change and you iterate and you test, and then you get more data and you learn. That's not the way we deliver healthcare. You know, it may work in the lab, it doesn't work in the clinical setting. And so, you know, I think anyone listening who's out there is considering, you've got to, again, go back to what it is you want. What do you want your life to look like? Where are your strengths? What are the problems that call to you? And whether or not you come work alongside someone like me and my team or another company solving these problems, or you find the calling to go do it on your own. But you got to get very, very clear with what it is you want to build and what you want to do.
Yeah. Okay. Repeat what you said in your mission statement about physicians.
Yeah. So our mission is caring for doctors, healing communities.
You know, your story about your journey to Alabama is a story that I've heard from so many physicians. I mean, I've recruited physicians, and sometimes it just doesn't work out through no fault of anybody. But sometimes it's kind of that, and it sounds like with you, it was that fact that you asked too many questions. And the administration, the C-suite, either wasn't prepared or just didn't want to address those issues. And so I'm finding a lot more of my physician friends being faced with that. And so, you know, we do have the shortage of the physicians. So in my mind, I want to do everything I can to keep physicians practicing medicine. Because too many physicians have chosen to leave, either to leave the industry as a whole or to go into the evil empire of corporate medicine and administrative medicine. So what you're doing for the docs, you know, giving them another option, I think is great. And so that's why I want to help you as much as I can get that word out to physicians. And you know, I also see the other impact of, you know, a lot of physicians are choosing to retire early, but they don't want to totally get out of the game. So what a great opportunity for them to do something like this with you.
Now, Kevin, I appreciate the kind words and the support. And, you know, to hit on your last point before I circle back to some other things you said, you know, we recently surveyed retiring urologists, and what they found out was 89% of retiring urologists still plan on working. Now, I haven't recently looked up the definition of retirement, but usually that means you stop working. And so what they're saying is they're leaving traditional W-2 insurance fee-for-service healthcare. That's what they're saying. But then most of them realize, wait a minute, this is what I've done my whole life. I actually love that aspect of helping the patients, of being a doctor. What I hated was the call, the increased work each year for a lower pay wage, the loss of autonomy, the administrative burden that keeps increasing every year with no solutions. And so, you know, I think you're astute with that, and that's what we're seeing. But I wanted to just briefly go back to, you know, I'll call it the headbutting that we see amongst physicians and administrators. I believe in taking radical responsibility, and I'm sure I was not the easiest person to work with back in those days. So this was not 100%, 0%, you know, sense of blame or fault. You know, I was going through a lot personally. I went in with unrealistic expectations. I did not ask the specific enough questions backed by numbers to ensure that I truly was a decision maker in that process. I did not ask those tough questions because it was easier to assume that, well, if that's what it said, then I'm just going to go build this department. And on the flip side, now after 5+ years of hundreds of conversations with executives, Kevin, I have a deep sympathy for the seat you have sat in previously. I mean, you face surprise JCO inspections. You've got new regulations every single week and day that require you to do this unbelievable amount of administrative work and then pass it along to doctors, not because you want to, it's because it's mandated by the federal government. You guys are in most cases running razor thin margins. You know, most people think, oh, these hospitals are making money hand over fist. Not all of them are. I mean, they may have big top line revenue, but you know, they're barely breaking even in some cases. And so, you know, I think ultimately what you're doing here is fantastic, right? We're having conversations where we realize, like, wait a minute, Dr. Kevin Stevenson is a human being who cares deeply about patients and doctors and improving the health of communities. So does Dr. Joe Pizzone, a urologist. Let's meet each other in the middle. Let's meet each other as human beings. Let's work together. And I think that's honestly where things fall apart in most places. It's not because the doctors are all perfect and the administrators are bad. Like, trust me, many of my colleagues need an ego check. You need to calm the heck down, and you need to realize that it's got to be a collaboration here. But on the same token, the administrators out there, Kevin, y'all need to understand the pressures that we're facing. We're taking all the risk in this system and very little of the upside. We are the ones who are, we're angry, not because we want to make more money or because we're jerks. We're angry because I saw patients suffering. Like, I got viscerally upset when I heard a patient I just did a major surgery on say, I couldn't get in to see you, Dr. Pizzone, so I drove 90 miles away to see your colleagues in Birmingham, when I was like, I've been here the whole time. I had no idea you even called. That's a system issue. Yeah. That's a breakdown of communication. And so I love what you're doing here, Kevin. I mean, we've just got to, it's got to be both. I don't have the skill set and expertise that you have. And no matter how empathetic you are, you have not walked a day in my shoes as a surgeon at 2 a.m. operating on a sick patient. And that doesn't, and we just have to accept that and work together.
Mm-hmm. Now, and Joe, you've hit the nail on the head. Throughout my career, I saw what I was doing in the C-suite as a calling. You know, I never wanted to go to medical school. You know, I found out, I stumbled into it through a dear mentor and friend of mine. But I knew the first day that I was called to be there because I could use my business sense to help the clinicians do their jobs better. And that's how I always tried to approach it. And, you know, I think I've been really proud of the relationships that I've developed and kept with physicians, because what I always told them is said, look, I'm always going to shoot straight with you. There's going to be times you don't like what I say, but I'm always going to tell you the truth. And so through that mutual respect, you know, we were able to work together and do some really good things. And so that's what I think we need a lot more of that in medicine. You know, we need a lot more of that in healthcare, where people are like, you know what, it's all about the patient. You know, however we can best help the patient, that's what we're going to do. But you touched on the other thing, you know, the razor thin margins. And people do have a real misconception of, you know, oh my gosh, I see this monolithic building of a hospital. They've got to be making a money hand over fist. And it certainly wasn't the case. So I could see, you know, yeah, we've got this number, but we're collecting this number. and, you know, technology and equipment and salaries continue to rise. And so that margin that, you know, that we need to maintain to frankly keep our doors open kept shrinking. And so, you know, trying to be as transparent as possible with my medical staff and say, hey guys, this is, you know, I know this piece of equipment would provide for better treatment for patients. We just can't afford it at this time. Is there another option for us to continue to provide great patient care? Maybe not, you know, the optimal care that a patient could get at an academic medical center where they do have a little bit more funding.
Yeah, it's all about communication when all is said and done, Kevin. Yeah. It's having that conversation. I think where I see most of those relationships go down a hill is the physician feels that they're not being listened to. And then the administrator just thinks that we're whiny and difficult. And so it's like, if that's your narrative, then you're at an impasse. Whereas if you say, listen, I hear you, here are the challenges, let's work together. And I think also the other big issue I'm seeing in healthcare is a risk aversion and this incorrect assumption that the risk of action is higher than it is. And people underestimate the risk of sitting idle. And so, you know, I think we can, and I've seen that in my own, building my own practice and building Virtue Care. It's like, no, we don't need an organizational chart that looks like, you know, this graph that goes down 800 pages and is layer upon layer. And I know that's a big complaint of doctors. God, there's all these middle managers who aren't really effective. And as someone who's run a medical practice, yeah, I think a lot of those folks are not effective. And but yet we just get lulled into, well, this is the way it's always been done. Back to my initial thing that drove me crazy. So I think it also requires a conversation. I think we've got to pull more physicians in the boardroom, not as, hey, I'm leaving clinical care and I'm now the CMO because I just hate my life and I want to just make money in an easier way. And instead pull in the practicing physicians and listen to them and really start holding people accountable to things. Cause you know, there's a lot of waste and again, doctors are equally guilty of this. Cause I see a lot of doctor practices who sell off to private equity or end up closing their doors. And I just, from the outside, look at how they're running their practice. And I go, well, no wonder you had to close the doors. You're running it like it's 1998. You know, and I had to get really gritty. I mean, when I opened my practice, one of the ways we've survived throughout COVID and in a competitive market was I questioned every assumption as to what is truly necessary to run a practice and provide a great patient experience. And newsflash, it's with a lot fewer people and a lot less money than you think.
No, you're exactly right. Well, I think we've touched on a lot of great topics, Joe, and I really appreciate your giving my audience some insight on your entrepreneurial journey, but also just the reinforcement of the fact that, hey, you know, if physicians and administrators, and really, I mean, it's throughout, you know, all healthcare, if we just took the time to really communicate better, we would realize that our goals are really aligned. And again, I go back to, it's about providing optimal patient care.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you get in front of somebody and you just treat them like a human being, you take off your administrator hat or your doctor hat and go, yeah, you know, one thing that would have changed the world for me when I was in that position is if an administrator sat down with me and said, Joe, how are you doing? You seem like this is really stressful and you're struggling. What's going on? I want to understand this. That would have just shown an ounce of humanity. It would have shown that this person actually cares about who I am. And I bet I would have been a lot more willing to listen instead of the lip service of, oh, okay, Dr. Pizzona, sure, we'll fix this. And in the end, they were scheming to just fire me. So, you know, I think that's a real life example of, you know, at the end here, we're all human beings. We all are trying to provide for our families. Most doctors are trying to take really good care of their patients in an ethical way. Most healthcare administrators, Kevin, went into healthcare to serve as well in their own manner. Let's break bread. Let's sit down. Let's have real conversations. Let's treat people as humans. And then, you know, let's start taking action. You know, entrepreneurship is simply just providing new solutions to existing problems. And I'm on LinkedIn almost every day. There's plenty of people complaining and there's plenty of people with ideas. There are very, very few people taking action. And so you should get over inaction, do something. You don't all have to go out and start your own company or business, but you also don't need to keep sitting there thinking, oh, this is my life for the next 30 years. I guess I'm stuck.
Yeah, you're right. Well, that's a great word to end on, Joe. Dr. Joe Pizzona with VirtuCare. Friend, thanks for joining me again. And let's not wait 3 more years to do this again.
That sounds great to me, Kevin. And really appreciate the opportunity. It's been great to reconnect. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks to you, my audience, for joining me today on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate it and look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks.